All right, we're here with my favorite cannabis capital author, Ross O'Brien. He's what I would call the thought leader of the cannabis capital space. We've been friends for a long time. Ross, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Always a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad to be your favorite.
You are my favorite, actually. You know, you and Dave the comedian.
Yeah.
Couldn't get to see Dave in his Midwestern humor last week,
but
I'm sure he did. I'm sure everybody laughed and then walked out.
That was brilliant.
He's tremendous. But listen, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, this family office space you're in, and then let's talk a little bit about your new book, which just hit the shelves this week.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jim. Yeah, so the book is Cannabis Capital, published by Entrepreneur Press. It actually came out yesterday, the 21st of January, so it's just hot off the press. First copies here for you I brought with me.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, thanks.
Very excited.
Appreciate all the support.
And it's our pleasure.
We started this project and started writing the book last year as we launched our investment fund and our cannabis event series. So we have the Cannabis Dealmaker Summits, which are the programs that we put together. We have Bonaventure Equity, which is our venture fund. And as we were kind of building all these pathways, I started doing some research and intended to simply write a book for entrepreneurs that would help them be more sophisticated and more successful in raising capital. And it actually turned into a pretty intensive project defining for the first time that cannabis is an economy, not an industry. Defining cannabis venture capital as a specific investment thesis that we've been developing, and I think it's very important to understand both for entrepreneurs and investors in the space, and then ultimately provide a pretty intensive tool for entrepreneurs to be able to be more sophisticated when they come to the table to look for capital and understand how it's a bilateral process.
You know, I think that one of the main things is your coining of the phrase the cannabis economy. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So what happened was, as I was doing a lot of the research, there were sort of two camps emerging, and this isn't everybody, but it became a pretty common thread. On the investor side, you had a lot of people that came from other backgrounds. Like, my background's mostly investing with family offices and healthcare and a number of different, some real estate and things. And a lot of more traditional investors were looking at the cannabis industry and identifying with an archetype of the people that they assumed were coming from there. So on the other side of that, you have these cannabis advocates and entrepreneurs that have been in cannabis for some time. And what ended up happening was that the cannabis industry people were saying, oh, it's an industry, you don't understand us. And then the investors were saying, well, we don't invest in those kinds of industries, and you weren't having the right conversation. So we wanted to really like inoculate that discussion, take it to a higher level. And cannabis, when we looked at it, is an economy. It's a global economy with sectors and verticals and industries within it. And so if you take this stigma from both sides of the equation off the table, you're no longer talking through the cannabis industry. When you start to talk about the cannabis economy, we as investors get more deeply embedded in the conversation that we want to have with the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, well, it's a business discussion versus a hippie discussion.
100%, yeah.
You know, from what I understand, and I haven't been there yet, hoping to go next year, the cannabis show in Vegas that just ended, it's gone from a bunch of long-haired hippies to a bunch of guys in suits.
It was interesting this year. It was the most well-attended yet. We were there to promote the book and meet a lot of our relationships. It ended up being very focused on agricultural technology, which is interesting, and there's definitely some emerging things there. But we came away with saying, look, yes, there is a new maturation of this space, and we consider ourselves part of that, but you have to acknowledge the authenticity of the advocacy that's been going on now for some time in order to help us, you know, bring the space to where it is today. But, you know, Jim, we came away saying, like, you know, there's a lot of people there that felt that they got a free pass because they loved cannabis, right? And saying, oh, there's cannabis businesses going out of business. And, you know, just because you love cannabis doesn't mean the rules of business don't apply, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got to believe that one of the big sectors coming up in the next couple of years is going to be workouts, because people got a lot of capital but didn't get the process or the thesis right. And so I think that lining up with people that understand the cannabis business is very important when you're looking to expand your process, your ideas, create nutraceuticals, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the possibilities are really, really limitless right now. I mean, we're looking a lot at all the different pathways now through FDA, et cetera, to really develop true pharmaceutical grade quality products that can be addressing everything from, you know, epilepsy like Epidiolex all the way through to, you know, Parkinson's, et cetera. When you start to look at those applications, it's extremely exciting. All the way to just direct-to-consumer, over-the-counter nutraceuticals where, you know, if you start looking at the nutraceutical environment, cannabis is appearing all over those sort of incumbent sectors, which is why we sort of felt, you know, if we keep thinking of this as its own industry, we're missing the broader conversation.
Now, how are you able to assess winners and losers so early in the process?
So that's the $800,000 million you know, question. Look, I think it all stems from experience and background, right? And, you know, for me personally, it's been 15 years of investing in private companies and helping private companies grow and expand and, you know, do M&A, been on boards, buy, sell transactions, et cetera. And you just get a muscle memory of sort of looking at that. And again, it goes back to the book, right? Which was, I want to bring some of those learnings and experiences to the people that are sort of earlier in their careers, in particular in cannabis. So a lot of it for us is operationally minded. We think that we're one of the few groups that's really, you know, as an investment fund built by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. And that's really what it comes down to. Private companies need a lot of care and feeding. So we have an entire platform where we help, you know, back office operations, finance, et cetera, access to regulatory policy. But when you start to look at that, you have to align our lens and our view and our expertise with the management teams and what they're trying to accomplish. And it really comes down to that alignment. I don't think anybody has the, you know, secret Rosetta Stone or, you know, the crystal ball that says, oh, this is a winner and a loser. It's whether or not it's a management team that fits what we look for, and then we have capabilities that can help them be more successful.
Now, do you focus on, we're talking cannabis, but that's split into basically hemp and the THC psychoactive stuff. Do you focus on one or the other?
No, we have a very broad investment thesis. We'll invest in anything in or around the global cannabis industry.
And a geographic focus?
Right now, we're generally focused on North America, mostly the U.S., just because the opportunity set's here. It's more accessible. But we have an ambition to be international, both in our investment thesis, how we deploy capital, and in our scope. We have a mission to create $1 billion in value and positively impact 1 billion lives. Well, we're not going to get to the billion lives side of the equation unless we have a global scope.
100%. Now, what are some of the ways that you think you're going to impact people across the globe with the cannabis fund?
So clearly healthcare is one of the areas. There's, when you start looking and, you know, exploring things around Parkinson's, et cetera, you know, the quality of life, the benefits to the end user are, you know, they're no longer under debate, right? And so there's just, let's bring those forward in a way that's safe, it's regulated, it's covered in, you know, the right, you know, efficacy where people can get access to it and live a better life. That to me is the...
What does efficacy mean? Because I hear that word a lot.
So I use that coming from working in the pharmacy space and in particular compounding pharmacy and healthcare. It's just really, you know, having the right outcomes for the patient, right?
Okay.
So there's a difference between buying something there's a difference between buying a multivitamin over the counter, right, versus actually having, you know, IV therapies for certain elements that you need. I mean, there's just a different outcome, and then you get into customized medications for gender and weight and age and these types of things. So the higher the specificity, the higher the efficacy or outcome for the patient.
Now, I know there's so many people that want to get into this industry for basically a couple different reasons. One is because it's a high growth industry.
Mm-hmm.
Two is they think it's sexy and easy. Let's talk about two first.
There is nothing easy about entrepreneurship, period. Let alone when you're in a space like this that it has such a fluid regulatory environment, both on the state and the federal level. It's very fluid internationally. So yes, it's getting a lot of attention and people. And look, and I think the irrational exuberance of the public markets in cannabis over the last couple of years.
In Canada.
Is in particular, yes, is a symptom of just society saying, yes, this is accepted.
Right, I want it.
Yeah.
I want it.
I know it's going to be part of, you know, the economy going forward. I want to get exposure to it. I believe in it. The problem is when you really dig into what it takes to be an investor or an operator, I mean, it's rarefied air that you get the kind of successes that you would get in a mature sector. So the kind of, we have to look at it. I said to somebody at MJ BizCon this year, I said, you know, there were, I don't know, I don't have the data for this, but I would be shocked if there weren't more healthcare companies that started and failed last year than all the entire cannabis companies combined. And everybody was walking around saying, oh, all these companies are failing. Well, not everybody is, you know, gets a free pass for entrepreneurship. Not every entrepreneur succeeds. It's difficult in the best of times. You add some of this dynamic, you really have to have, you know, a lot of tolerance for going into the space.
wow, so being a cook and saying I want to bake CBD brownies, it's not that simple, is it?
It's not. And look, I think so many people are out there doing great things. And one of the things that I'm encouraged about is that just because there's, you know, this change and this reset in the public markets, that's not going to slow down entrepreneurship, right? And it never has historically in any mature sector. So we're ready to be right in this wave of where I think just phenomenal entrepreneurs are coming out of the space, are building great durable companies. They're being resilient. They're finding opportunities, being resourceful. I mean, to me, it's a lot of green field.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to take a break right here. Can you stick with us and do one more segment?
Absolutely.
Well, that's tremendous. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with Ross O'Brien. He's the founder of Bonaventure Equity, the author of Cannabis Capital, and the man, if you want to know how to invest your family office money in cannabis, that's Ross. We'll be right back after this short break.
Doing okay?
Tremendous.
Okay. I think you... like talk a lot, right?
Yeah, fine. We're just going on a break. Becca's listening to us kibitzing back and forth, and then she's going to edit it. Don't worry about a thing. Yeah. All right, we're back. We're back with, I'm going to say it, my good friend Ross O'Brien. He's the founder of Bonaventure Equity. We got to give a high five to Dave Reynolds for introducing us, and a big high five to Tom Handler for putting all of us together.
Sure.
My good friend Tom. Great. Tom will be on in a few weeks also.
Oh, fantastic.
We're going to talk to Tom about what's going on in the family office space in 2020. But let's talk a little bit cannabis. I will make sure I say hi for you. I will make sure. He's the man. Yeah. I love that guy. Yeah. You know, I play. Oh, we'll talk about it. I love him. I play the thing where Michael Jordan comes out with Easton, and I go, no, from the University of Illinois. It's the best. He loves it. He loves it. But let's talk about cannabis. You can listen to it a couple of weeks and have get all flustered and embarrassed, which is impossible with that guy. I learned how to do it though. So Ross, tell us a little bit, why did you decide to get into the cannabis space?
So it's something that had been on my radar for a long time. It also goes back to just my experiences in college. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but it's one of those things where it was so ubiquitous and something that didn't seem to have a lot of the sort of harm and you know, things that are associated with the stigma to it. And it just seemed natural that this should be just part of what people do. Fast forward to doing private transactions for about 15 years, almost exclusively with family offices. We're always looking for new emerging spaces to go be involved in and invest in. And had started looking at cannabis companies a while ago and just wasn't quite comfortable yet with the entrepreneurs that we were meeting, sort of where things were. And over the last 24-36 months, the opportunity set's been very exciting. The space is gaining a ton of traction with things like the Safe Banking Act and a lot of regulatory momentum that, albeit is not a federal legalization conversation, but from a regulatory standpoint, I think there's a lot of pathways opening up. And I think you see the demand and the opportunity there. It was just really something we felt strongly about, and then obviously mapping to healthcare, we feel very strongly that we're only scratching the surface as to what the benefits this plant will have.
My gosh, if we only knew what we would know in 100 years.
Right.
So, so you throw a lot of conferences, you get a lot of people go to your conferences. Let's make believe you just did the opening, hi, how you doing, plenary at one of your conferences. It's over, you're walking off the stage, you get to the stairway. There's always people that want to ask questions. What's their number one question?
Well, so most people are curious about federal legalization, and I actually don't believe that's the right question. A lot of people are, especially if they're new and just sort of exploring either to start investing or maybe considering being in a business, everybody sort of looks at descheduling as the big catalyst. I couldn't handicap when it's going to happen. I'm not going to bet the timing of, but I'm definitely betting that the regulations are going that direction. So we have to look a little more locally in the markets that are accessible now. So we look at every state as its own sort of market, right? Before we make an investment, we look at where the state is, where the company is. Does it have an opportunity just in that state? Does it have an opportunity to cross state interaction? So for us, the question is less about federal legalization, but that's certainly the number one question that people are asking.
How about the people? You know, you go in and you look for companies and you pick the companies, you like their product, and then you look at the management team. Is there a difference between the management team in the cannabis business and in the general business world? I would think not.
Certainly not in the entrepreneurs that we want to be involved with and back. I mean, it's it is a special type of business person, right? It's someone with a high tolerance for risk, but somebody that's really successful at managing a lot of different moving parts, a lot of different elements to the business. Like I said earlier, resilient, resourceful, dynamic in terms of a leadership, collaborative. So there is a whole sort of checklist of qualities, quantitative and qualitative, that we want to look at the individual level. And then obviously we want to look at the merits of the business. And I would say the one thing that's the easiest for us to say we would not get excited about is when we look at a business and it looks and feels like a Band-Aid solution or a temporary solution. Just because the opportunity exists today to potentially do something cannabis doesn't mean it's always going to be there, right?
So then you're looking for something not only with good operators, but that has a likely runway down the road.
For sure.
So, you know, that would be, you know, health and beauty aids, infusions. We know it works on, it's been approved for epilepsy. What are some of the other things that are poking around that might get approval?
So there's somewhere between 20 and 30 FDA applications in right now, and we're just starting to get a little deeper into that to understand sort of where these different pathways are developing. I think that's something we'll be very involved in. But again, it's been a little bit, the story from the beginning for us has been go slow to go fast. So once we start to identify the spaces that we're most intrigued with, we're in no rush to go start, you know, writing a bunch of checks, you know. So we wanted to really understand, you know, the people and the entrepreneurs that we get most excited about before we, you know, jump in too quickly.
Now, who is the typical, what's the typical profile of one of the investors in your fund?
So all of our investors are ultra high net worth family offices, mostly people that I've had relationships with for a very long period of time that we've put together. I'm an investor in the fund myself. So it's, you know, we've put together a group of people that we've been successful with in the past to take a couple of steps in the trajectory on launching the fund. Institutional investors can't be in the space right now. And really the best fit for us is the portfolio approach, right? Where we're the fund manager. It's very difficult to pick a winner or loser in this space. And instead of picking deals, my advice to the types of investors that we work with is you really want to find the right managers that have the right access, that have the right reputation, that have the right, you know, we have a track record that's developing now. And that's really the most optimal way to get, I think, the highest return profile is investing in funds and private companies.
So then where do you think the cannabis business is headed? Because it's really unclear from all of the federal regulations we just talked about, it would appear that it would have to be state-focused. So what are the states that offer the best opportunities in today's world?
So it's the usual suspects that are already there, right? So what I like about it is you look at Oregon and California and then, you know, new states that have come on most recently, like Michigan and Illinois for recreational, right? The model's developing, right? So I think there's a lot of momentum on the regulatory. We spend a lot of time in DC. It's something that we have a lot of access to, and it's important to us both as investors, but also as a benefit to our portfolio companies. And I was really surprised, and a lot of people were at this. Right now, cannabis is essentially the only bipartisan issue that people can really point to, where you're getting a lot of Republican and Democratic votes at the same time. Because you have the constituents that are supporting it, right? So on the Republican side, you've got a lot, you know, look, this has got to come into the banking system, right? The fact that you can't have traditional banking at the state level is going to be a big impediment, but they're looking at ways to resolve that. And then that opens up credit card processing. And then obviously it would be better if these companies were public in the US than in Canada. So the exchanges want it. You know, the insurance companies need to understand how to get their arms around this and need to have some regulations that allow them to operate. My guess is that it's going to remain very much a state level with some air coverage at the federal level that's going to allow the states to be more and more autonomous in how they govern this without the risk of federal intervention. And then at some point it will develop at the federal level.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a states' rights issue for a while
Yeah. Still.
And I don't really have a problem with that. There are other issues that are states' rights issues. We don't talk politics here, so we won't go into those issues.
Of course, yeah.
But I have no problem with certain states being favorable towards it. And if you want to be in that space, you go move there and you get it.
100%.
And, you know, that is sticky for people that have health problems that don't have the money to move. Mm-hmm. You know, there should be dispensation for somebody like that. It is health and wellness. Mm-hmm. But this is becoming a lifestyle. A real wellness lifestyle. It's one of the pillars of many people. Pilates, yoga, cannabis, wellness, mindfulness. Mm-hmm. It's all about a lifestyle. And are you seeing acceptance in the family offices at the
founder level
yeah. and then also yeah. at the more secondary levels?
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't go anywhere without talking to somebody about cannabis and not hear generally a positive story if they're using it, right? Or whether it's just CBD or whether it's, I mean, every gym in the country, I think, right now is talking about how it's great for, you know, inflammation and how it's great for recovery and how there's topicals that help with joint pain. And so you have all this.
I use a tincture in the morning and in the evening.
Exactly.
It makes me feel a lot, you know, I assume,
so,
you know.
When you're hearing that from everybody, it's hard to point to any of the, you know, downside in getting it, you know, the right pathways into people's hands if it's done correctly.
I have to tell you is that my wife is the straightest Bambi person on the planet. And yesterday she told me that she wouldn't be able to make it without the CBD. Mm-hmm. You know, she had the transplant and she's under a lot of stress right now. And I'll just do anything for her. And this is something that really is making her life, her quality of life, better. And if I can get on top of my soapbox and scream about that, I will. It's why I present and promote so many thought leaders, like we had Derek and we have you today. Mm-hmm. The whole show's this. Manny Johnson, I want you to get together. I'm going to get you together with Manny. That's going to be tremendous. We'll get you together with Jake and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to continuing to build a tremendous environment with you. Now we got Dave Lives down here. So you're going to be down here more?
Oh, hopefully. Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, that might be a little dangerous.
Well, I'm halfway between Dave and West Palm. I can be your intermediary and stop if you need to. But I want to thank you so much. I want to thank Dave Reynolds again for putting all this together. Ross O'Brien for being our cannabis family office expert. Again, I want to thank Tom Handler for the introduction to you. Mm-hmm. And Tom will be on in a couple of weeks talking about family office financing. If you want to leave somebody with one last thought about the cannabis economy, Ross, what would you say?
Well, I think it would stem from the conversation we just had, in that when you're hearing that it works, there's something here. And yes, we've got to go figure out more. I would say it's not one of these things that it should be just a free-for-all. You know, let's find the right momentum to get the, you know, infrastructure around the space so that the product can be delivered in a safe and helpful manner. But also there's a ton of opportunity, and I would say, you know, let's continue. I'm looking forward to the entrepreneurs that are really going to be driving things going forward.
Well, Ross, I'm looking forward to interviewing you again with some of your good, with the people you're investing with. I think that would be great.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Oh, well, that'll be great. Well, listen, thank you again for coming. We're going to have another Freedom Business. Look for us again next week with Freedom Business. We've got a whole bunch of other great guests. And I want to thank Rebecca Carlson and her team for putting this together for us today. So this is Jim Fried for Freedom Business. Until next week, I'll say, remember, the person that wants to do something finds a way. The other finds an excuse. Now go out there and make it happen.